Blog Talk Radio.
His name is Malik Zulu Shabazz. Malik Zulu Shabazz.
It is indeed my honor and great joy and privilege to be invited by brother and Dr. Malik Zulu Shabazz, who is one of the greatest student leaders of all time.
I'm talking about terrorism now. We want a war on terrorism. The war on terrorism should have started 400 years ago. Bring the flag, brother. Bring the flag.
Bring the flag.
Bring. Because I'm here to tell you that false patriotism will not get you out of this.
Right.
Holding a bandana flag around your head will not get you out of this. Huh? Flag on your antenna in your car will not get you out of this. You might be saying, God bless America. But when did America ever bless God? You might be saying, God bless America. But God might be damning America at this very hour.
What's all this shit I see on here about harassment and all that bullshit, rap for power? You sumbitches, get out and get a goddamn job and make a constructive citizen out of yourself and stop all this bullshit. You wouldn't have to have no fucking rally for power. You got that message, motherfucker?
Black power. Black power and more black power to my people. This is your brother, your soldier in arms and comrade in battle. This is Sean Saddam Kweli. I'm happy to be able to broadcast live once again to you from right here in the hails and the smells of North America. Take a deep breath and inhale the fumes. That's the hails and the smells of North America. As always, I count this a privilege. I count this a joy. I count this an esteemed pleasure and honor to be able to talk to you, my brothers, my sisters, and some others from this platform that we call Black Power Radio. This is the official broadcast of the new Black Panther Party for self-defense. And I don't know what you heard. I don't know what you may have read. But the new Black Panther Party for self-defense is alive and well. We're happy to be here with you. Here on the 4th of February, 2013, as we tackle a bold subject tonight. A bold subject tonight, talking about trade. We're talking about trade, the cornerstone of civilization and the tool for global supremacy. Trade, the cornerstone of civilization, and we're talking about the tool for global supremacy. Now, we have to open up our show giving thanks. We can't even go forward without giving thanks to the God of our forefathers and foremothers. We would be derelict in all of our duties if we did not thank the almighty, wise, true, and living God for giving us another chance at life, for giving us another chance to live and to breathe and to see, and most of us to walk and to talk and to be the people that we are. We have to give thanks to that God, recognizing that everything has a balance, and recognizing the masculine and feminine expression of the Most High Creator. We give thanks to both half, twin halves of the same divine essence, and we thank that God, and we give praise and honor by whatever language you call on that creator in, whether you say Babaluaye, whether you say Oludamare, whether you say Oshun or Ogun, whether you say Ra or Amun Ra, whether you say Allah or whether you say Lord God Almighty, whether you say Jehovah Nisi, Jehovah Sikkenu, Jehovah Raka, whether you just, as they do in some parts of Southern Africa, where by God's grace we'll be going in a few short weeks, if you just do like them and stick one finger up in the air and bear witness that regardless to land, label, or language, there is but one God, we're right here with you on Black Power Radio and the new Black Panther Party giving thanks. We give thanks for all of our freedom fighters, those who were mathematicians and scholars and chemists and physicists, and those who dealt with the economics of that day, and those who dealt with the government and law of that day, and those who dealt with the educational systems of our yesteryear. We give thanks to those because we know that most have only learned about the slave trade, the transatlantic slave trade in high school, or maybe some in college, but most of us have not learned much about our brothers and sisters and our ancestors, forefathers and foremothers, who were great inventors and great thinkers and great leaders and great teachers, and those whom we in the hells and smells of North America and all throughout the world descend from. So we give them honor and we give them thanks and praise for their contributions to our nation and our people and our families. And we give thanks for all of our strugglers and our liberators and those who, when a no good oppressor and a no good beast and an enemy went into Africa and tricked our people, deceived our people, and made promises to our people that they did not keep and would not keep, and that our people were foolish enough to listen to them, that they sold segments of our people into servitude and into slavery, and that we end up on a westerly course, traveling across the Atlantic Sea, making our way, fighting all along the way. I have to add that in, fighting all along the way, until we end up in the Isles of the Pacific and end up on different islands, ultimately up into Jamestown, Virginia, and now here in the hills and smells of North America, thanking all of our freedom fighters and strugglers, giving thanks to those like Toussaint Louverture, giving thanks to Buchmann and Dessalines, giving thanks to Denmark Vesey, and giving thanks to Nat Turner, giving thanks to the great ones who have fought, took lives, and gave lives, and made the ultimate sacrifice, giving thanks to those before them, like Queen Nzinga, Queen Hatshepsut, giving thanks to Queen Candace, and all of those who continue to fight and struggle and lead. And of course, in our modern context, in our modern sense, we have to give thanks for that great patriarch and that great warrior who told us from the jump and from Jump Street that it was Africa for the Africans. It's Africa for the Africans, that it's our land for us. And that great patriarch I'm talking about is our spiritual great-great-grandfather, one who we know affectionately as the Honorable Marcus Mosiah Garvey. Giving thanks to him and giving thanks to the great prophet Noble Drew Ali, and giving thanks to that great messenger of Allah or messenger of God, who was raised up from one W.F. Muhammad, who came to North America July 4th, 1930, and stood up a Georgia-born black man in the hills of North America, who taught our people a knowledge of ourselves and a knowledge of our history and a knowledge of our culture, and told us that the white man was not a devil but the devil, and told us that the original black man was the original man, that maker, that owner, cream of the planet Earth, father of civilization, God, and goddess of the universe. I'm talking about the most honorable Elijah Muhammad, giving thanks also for those who he trained, like that great black nationalist teacher and preacher and minister and Pan-Africanist, who ignited the continent of Africa and ignited us here in the hills of North America, talking about that great black nationalist minister Malcolm X, Brother El Hajj Malik Shabazz, Brother Omar Wali. Of course, giving thanks to a great student who has continued to carry on in the tradition of freedom fighting and liberation struggle and continuing on after all of these years, talking about his national spokesman, talking about the Honorable Elijah Muhammad's national spokesman and representative, talking about one Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan and all of his students, the Honorable Silas Muhammad, all of those who have continued on in that tradition of Nation of Islam, believing that we have to develop land of our own and have economics of our own and have a program of our own. And we have to give thanks to those who were beneficiaries of the labor of Minister Malcolm X and the labor of the Deacons for Defense, and those who were the beneficiaries of the labor of Kwame Ture, formerly Stokely Carmichael, and Bob Brown, and Mukasa Ricks Dada, and those who were down in the South, in Lowndes County, and those who were organizing with SNCC, and organizing the students, and organizing the people and the churches, ultimately towards self-determination, and then moving into what's known as the Black Panther Party, and they set Black Panther chapters up all across the country long before 1966. Kwame Ture and others were setting up Black Panther chapters in Chicago and setting them up on the West Coast, setting them up in New York, setting them up all around, and ultimately that spirit, that Black Panther spirit, moved all the way up with the help of a man named Mark Comfort, went all the way to the Bay Area, went all the way to where they formed the Northern California chapter of the Black Panther Party. So we give thanks for that regiment, and give thanks for the regiment that came up from Oakland, California in 1966 under a man who we now know affectionately as Dr. and Minister Huey P. Newton, and our comrade Bobby Seale and little Bobby Hutton, our comrade, and the Forte brothers and all of those who began there in Oakland. We give thanks for them here on Black Power Radio. And if we live to make the age of 1,000, if we had proper dietary and proper thought processes and we didn't deal with so many toxins and negative thoughts, we can never thank God enough for the upstart from Dallas, Texas, with the idea given to a man out of Milwaukee, Wisconsin named Michael McGee, and moved into Indianapolis, Indiana, and then organized its way to Dallas, Texas, with the help of a man named Aaron Michaels and a few others that were there. We can never thank God enough for the upstart of the new Black Panther Party for self-defense, and we can never thank that God enough for putting that ball, that new Black Panther ball, in the hands of a beautiful, bold, bald-headed black man, 100% black man, uncompromising, unrelenting, and unflinching with the enemy, who told the world and stood before the world and told us all that his purpose was to give the devil hell from the cradle to the grave. And he did that from the time he got up, from the time he laid down. And we're talking about a man in whose spirit we move and operate in. We're talking about our black power general, the Honorable Dr. Khalid Abdul Muhammad. And if we didn't quite make 1,000, but we reached the ripe old age of Methuselah, which is 969 years, if we fell short of 1,000 but made 969, we can never thank God enough for a mighty spokesman, a mighty representative, a mighty national chairman who has held the line for umpteen years, continued and pressed on and made his way to be the longest standing chairman, Panther chairman of any of the regiments, anybody who calls himself a Panther. You have to salute this brother because he has stood longer than any of the chairmen. He's faced jail, he's faced fights, he's faced legal situations, faced economic situations, faced personal situations, and continues to stand here in the hells and the smells of North America. He's known affectionately as the attorney at war, the five-star general. He's known, I call him, the Pan-African assassin, among other names. But this brother, if you don't know who he is, I'll make you very acquainted with him here on Black Power Radio, as I'm honored and proud to represent him to you and to the world. I'm talking about our national chairman, Dr. and Attorney Malik Zulu Shabazz. And I give you Black Power salutes and greet you in your own way, whether it's Assalamu Alaikum, or whether you say Hotep, peace to the gods, peace to the earth. If you say free to land, on the move, or whatever your greeting is, we greet you here on Black Power Radio tonight as we talk about trade, the cornerstone of civilization. And as I move this subject forward, I'm always honored and thankful to have a black man on the air with us tonight who is a cornerstone of this movement. It's righteous that we have this topic tonight because this brother is a cornerstone of the movement. If you don't know what a cornerstone is a stone that you can put weight on, that you can put pressure on. It's the stone that can uphold the foundation of the house, and that does uphold the foundation of the house that you're building on. And this brother is a man who served direct with the Honorable Dr. Khalid Abdul Muhammad, having a background in Pan-Africanism long before that, a background in activism long before that. He was a man whom I believe was made in his mother's womb through the blessing of his father and his mother, made by God to do what he's doing, made by God to roll with the Honorable Dr. Khalid Abdul Muhammad, made by God to roll with Dr. Malik Zulu Shabazz, made by God to roll with us today in the new Black Panther Party, to help to guide us and to help to mold us and to help to guide the black nation and give his experience and to give his training and to give his thoughts and his analysis on the time that we live in and where we must go, what we must do, and how we must make the moves that we need to make. The brother served as the national assistant to the Honorable Dr. Khalid Abdul Muhammad and now serves as the national chief of staff of the new Black Panther Party for Self-Defense. I want to bring him on, and I want you all to bring him on wherever you are. Please help me to welcome to our radio broadcast as he will introduce our guest for tonight on Black Power Radio. This is Minister Hashim Nzinga, Black Power.
All right, Black Power.
Black Power.
Brother Sean, it's always great to be on Black Power Radio. I want to just say that this is our time. This is our day. We got children that's been waiting on this day. We got babies that's in the womb that's been waiting on this day. And it just makes me feel good whenever we finna uplink in a couple of days a website that's talking about Panther economics. We know we're going somewhere because the foundation of civilization is spiritual first, humanity. Then you got to have some kind of economic development to support the structure of your nation. And I just want to say the pillars of economics is first and foremost, always spiritual, humanity, then economic development. Then we can go control these politicians. Then we can build our educational facilities. Then we can eat to live and go on with our lives. But we got to get some economic development going on. And I'm so proud of the New Black Panther Party for being in the streets so long among the grassroots movements, helping our people and supporting black, which we should do more. Last week we talked about we spent $131 billion last year. And we talked about Dr. King saying in his last lecture that we spent $31 billion that year when Dr. King was assassinated. And if we're spending $131 billion, it's time for us to do some black economics because we ain't spending it with each other. That's for sure. So I'm just happy to be on Black Power Radio. I want to thank all the listening audience and the New Black Panther Party all over the world. I want to give honor to my mentor and my father-like figure, the Honorable Dr. Khalid Muhammad. Long live the spirit of Dr. Khalid Muhammad is in us. That's why we're mentioning his name to the world and making it live. I want to give thanks and praises to his young lawyer, warrior, and our chairman now, Dr. Attorney Malik Zulu Shabazz, has kept the ship going, and Brother Akbar, and Brother You, Brother Sean, and Brother DK, and just so many. If I start mentioning them, I'm going to get in trouble. I'll say to all the New Black Panther Party members around the country and the sisters who are listening, I just want to say we have always dealt with black economics on Black Power Radio. We didn't have on Dr. Khalid Mansour, who wrote the song I'm Black and I'm Proud for James Brown, and with James Brown attorney, with the senior, who was the senior advisor to the rich, one of the richest men in the world, the Prince of Saudi Arabia. Brother won an OPEC oil case back in the 70s and is the 19th richest black man in the world. We didn't have Dr. Michael V. Roberts, the CEO of National Black Hotel Association, owned over 57 businesses out of St. Louis, and taught us about black economics a couple of weeks ago. We didn't have Dr. Como Cottrell, the founder of Proline Hair Care. We didn't have Brother James Prince, who started all the rap world and all these people making all this money with Rap-A-Lot Records, and Brother Russell Simmons. We didn't have them all on these programs. And we had all the grassroots movements, the brothers and sisters that run these little shops in our neighborhoods. Everybody get to be on Black Power Radio. But we're going to bring another one of our friends and colleagues tonight, good friend of mine here in Atlanta, Georgia, who has a very distinct reputation to moving on a domestic and international financial pad. We're gonna in a few seconds we're gonna bring on our brother Latron Price, but I want to just say a couple of things about this brother. Latron has a very extensive background in domestic and international experience in finance. He's a financial consultant in trade, global relief efforts. He negotiates for us all over the country with the great negotiation skills to deal in this country and out of this country. He, Latron, is the president of American Sales and Distribution Services Incorporated, a global training platform based in Atlanta, Georgia. Mr. Price also formerly managed partners of KG Group International Supplies Construction Corporation. He did so much. He was the CEO of American Food Staffing Corporation, which employed over 250 people here in Atlanta back in 2009. And I just, he got so much to say. So I'm going to yield my time and thank Black Power Radio for once again letting me have a word. But we're going to bring our brother Latron Price from Atlanta, Georgia, by way of St. Louis, CEO, and my Conrad on right now and let him get with the Black Power family.
All right, Brother Mensah, thank you so much. Brother Price, are you on with us, sir?
I am. Greetings, family.
Greetings to you, brother. Greetings to you. Welcome to Black Power Radio. Welcome, sir. This is your first time on, right?
Hey, absolutely, absolutely. And let me give thanks to, first of all, the Creator, Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim, in the name of God, the beneficent of all praise be to Allah, Lord and God of all the worlds. And let me give thanks to Brother Malik, Zulu Shabazz. Thank you, brother, for the invitation. And then Brother Hashim Nzinga, who's here in Atlanta with me, who we talk on a daily basis. Thank you, family, for having me and amongst your audience. I'm a student, just like the rest of us. And I'm here to share several things that we're doing, but more importantly, dialogue with you brothers on how we can move this steamship forward.
Yes, sir. Well, brother, first, we heard some of the introduction of your bio by Minister Hashim Nzinga. Tell us something about yourself. Tell us a little bit about your background, where you come from, how you got started, and who are you as Latron Price? Who are you, sir?
Okay. First of all, I'm Latron. Brother, I was actually introduced to actually, let me say this. I was awakened to consciousness of the black world through the Honorable Elijah Muhammad, through the Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan, who was, I got that through my brother Tommy Muhammad, who's a student minister in the nation. And we was up in upstate New York at the time. I believe it was in ninth grade in high school, 10th grade in high school. And we were in a place called Lowellville, New York. My brother and I were the only black kids in the school from K through 12. And we heard a brother down in Syracuse, New York. He had passed along some Farrakhan tapes, and we had gotten them, and the cassette tapes back in the day. And we listened to those, and eventually Tommy eventually made his way to Syracuse and would feed me information about just black consciousness in general. And beyond that, eventually begin to travel. Again, St. Louis is home to us. So as I traveled back to St. Louis and, really got a good ground of how the nation worked as it relates to the family, I went to Tennessee State University, went to college in Nashville, worked with the Brothers of Moss there. It was a part of a group that helped organize the vans to Washington, D.C. I think we took three vans, and we took college students in Nashville, Tennessee, and to witness the Million Man March. And that experience, it really began to birth some ideas in me that eventually kind of led me down the path that I am on today, experiencing this, seeing this massive movement of a million men or better, men, particularly black men, looking for progression in equity. And so from that, I got involved in various businesses. One of the first businesses we had was a pager store in Nashville, Tennessee. Then we got involved in taxi cabs, and from there, as you shared some of the things, we had a staffing agency. We came to Atlanta, moved to Atlanta by way of I left one company. I decided to start my own company. The company we started was a company called American Food Staffing, which we were actually one of the number one employers in the city of Atlanta from about 2000 to 2006, where we basically sold that business, went off into doing a more global business, and that was doing starting the trade. So I worked with an organization called the KG Group, learning international business and international banking. And the KG Group was a company that contracted with U.S. Department of Defense, and they supplied things to the military in Iraq and in Qusar, and supplied everything from sugar to generators to socks, pretty much anything that you know they needed, the military needed. KG Group would source and supply them. And so worked with that company. Also, we had gotten involved in a company, a petroleum company, domestically in Missouri, where we began to supply Avis Rental Car and Budget Rental Car with petroleum fuel as a minority supplier. And from that, again, evolved, began to learn other business forms. And one of the most extraordinary experiences was when we came back domestically, I think it was in 2009, I took a year to really just go see the world. I think I was on, at the time, I'm going to call it a spiritual journey, and the journey landed me in Africa to really trace my roots, and I visited the Gambia through Senegal, and spent quite a bit of time in Senegal and in Gambia, and then I went to Ghana, went to Congo, went throughout East Africa, and what happened was I would fly into the airport and go to the port and look at the shipping companies, or look at the size of the port, look at the shipping companies that were bringing material into the continent. And then I would go to the industry rows. That's where the companies were that took unloaded the ship, and they would bring it to these warehouses or industrial parks. They call them industry rows in various parts of the world. And I write down the companies, particularly in West Africa. I studied a lot of the Lebanese companies at the time on the people that were bringing in raw material and finished goods into and out of the country. Then we would look at their transportation system, such as their roads, their rail systems. And we look at the agriculture and then go to the next country and travel, like I said, for about a year just studying, trying to get a very good understanding of how the world works as it relates to trade. And in that experience, I came back domestically and I met a guy named Joe Beasley. I was introduced to him by a guy named Shelley Winter. And Joe Beasley, who's based in Atlanta, I learned was a brother who helped bring Nelson Mandela to Atlanta to raise money for his presidential campaign, and then took the brother back to South Africa and organized his voter registration drive. And when they organized his voter registration drive, Brother Nelson Mandela won the election, they helped create the start of the end of apartheid. And he was very instrumental in leveraging his relationships with U.S. multinationals, particularly with Coca-Cola, UPS, and various others, to divest out of South Africa to end apartheid, and saw the power that a moral stand would have in our time, in this modern era, having a moral stand against a multinational such as a Coca-Cola, and see them pull investments out of South Africa. So when I met Mr. Beasley and I learned about this, I also learned that he had started a university, the first historically black college university outside of the U.S. in São Paulo, Brazil. And the name of the university is called Zumbi Paramar University. It's in São Paulo. They have a school of business currently and a school of law, and they started a medical program. And as you're aware, Brazil is going through a civil rights movement, and it's very interesting that they are 40-plus years behind the rights that we have privilege to in North America. And some parts of Brazil are largely of African descent. So in that experience, Mr. Beasley one day called me up and said, "Hey, Latron, we're going to take a trip to Italy." And I was like, mm-hmm. "Okay, we're going to go to Italy. What are we going to do in Italy?" He said, "We're going to go see the Pope of Rome." And I said, "Really, we're going to see the Pope of Rome?" And it took me by a little bit of surprise. Like, okay, this is interesting. So we end up taking a trip. We get to Italy. We get to Rome. And we were hosted by the Ruspoli family. The lady name is Giada Ruspoli. She has 15 popes in her family, 8 which are direct blood relatives. And so we get there, and before we go, I said, "Mr. Beasley, what is the discussion going to be about?" And he said that the discussion is going to be about land that the Catholic Church owns in Haiti. We are going to tell the Pope that we want him to give the land back to the Haitian people and open up the Vatican Bank to provide housing. And I said, "Okay, well, explain that to me." He said, he began to share with me that when Christopher Columbus was commissioned by King Ferdinand and Queen Isabella of Spain, when he landed in Hispaniola, one half the island of DR, the other half of the island Haiti, he declared an eighth of the island to the Catholic Church. And he went in that honor. And Mr. Beasley's contention was it wasn't his to give in the first place. And so and then November, the earthquake happened. So we went to the Vatican. We had this discussion with their philosophers, and the Pope sent his second in command, one of the archbishops of the Vatican. We had this conversation, and they gave us reasons on why they wouldn't relinquish that particular land. And so what our idea was, we would organize a farmers co-op. We would work with John Deere to get equipment and then organize a farmers co-op to make the land productive, because one of their claims to not relinquish land was that it would land up in corrupt hands in Haiti, and that Haiti was a corrupt place. And so what we had, the corruption was taken in the first place, but they did acknowledge that they owned the land. And so our position was, okay, we will organize a farmers co-op, and we will create production on the land and show that the land would be used for the sustainability of those inhabitants, of those people that lived there, particularly those former slaves that were the result of the Haitian Revolution. So, and this is all took place in 2009. And then I'm sorry, the earthquake was 2010, so this took place in 2009. So that November, or that February, I believe, was the earthquake. And we went to Haiti. We have been operating in Haiti for some time. Mr. Beasley had been, actually. And we had established the Joe Beasley Foundation by then, and the Joe Beasley Foundation was working with, we have an orphanage there that we're working with, and we have there's a brother that's in the Central Plateau of Haiti. His name is Chavon Baptiste. He represents 250,000 peasant farmers. And it's very interesting because these farmers are being marketed by companies like Monsanto to buy their seeds and various groups. So these particular farmers, which I thought was very interesting, are constantly looking for access to supply the markets with their produce. So from there, when we were in, by the way, in Española, we visited Christopher Columbus' home where he landed, and also we visited the Citadel. And the Citadel is in Haiti, and it's what Christophe, the revolutionary leader of Haiti, built. It's an amazing palace on top of a hill. And please feel free to encourage the listeners to just Google this stuff, because the more information you have, the more informed you are, you could really have an impact in how to engage the stuff. So so we eventually came back to Atlanta, and we began to work on on a plan and how to interact. And in that development, I began to compile all the stuff I'd learned over the years and this journey the Creator has us on understanding this stuff. One, having an awakening of just the world, and then two, having this global transformation or travel to understand the world. And so we organized a global trading platform. But in order for us to understand economics, at least for me, I really had to go back to the root of it. And the root of it is, it really was, for me, the lightning rod of knowledge landed when I was in the Congo. And this brother brought me, I'll take a break in just a second, but I just want to tell this brief story.
You're fine, brother. Go right ahead.
Okay. Thank you all. And thank you all, the listeners who are listening. I appreciate your patience. This brother brought me a 5-gallon bucket of rocks. And it was very interesting because this is dirty rocks from out back. I'd say rocks, these are just, they look just rocks. And he brought the rocks, and he had his 5-gallon bucket of rocks, and he sat on a little stoop, and he had a pole that he had made, or a pipe, and then he had put a crush on it. It looks like an old car axle. It's a heavy pipe that he had cut up, and he had put this little grinder on the end, and he sat on the stoop and crushed the rocks up in the bucket until it was like a sand or a powder. He physically, just the brother, straight, they call this alluvial mining in Africa, but this particular brother was crushing the rocks up, and he crushed it to a powder. He had a box that he had made, and the box had some shells on the front, I believe about 7 shells on the front of it, and he had water running through the back of the box, and he'd take the dirt and dump it into the back of the box, and as it come out the bottom, he would fill up another bucket, and he would dump it again and keep doing that until the water was getting clear. So then as he opened up the shells, he said this is copper, he said this is tin, this is zinc, this is platinum, he said this is gold. And when he showed me the gold, it literally hit me like a lightning rod, because when I saw the gold, I realized that gold was absolutely free, that it didn't cost anything but the labor it took the guy to crush up the rocks. And so when I saw the gold, it was, like I said, it was a lightning rod of knowledge, because what it translated to me was that this rock that was dirty, regular-looking rock had this gold dust, and it wasn't a lot, but it was enough to know that it was gold, as he was explaining it to me, that it was absolutely free. And we read about it when we was in elementary school and those things, and you talk about the gold rush in North America going to California, but it don't become real to you until you see the dirt, the rock, the gold come out of the rock. And so I began to look at the gold as a tool that the Europeans use to smelter. They cleaned it and polished it, and they gave the rocks back to the Africans, particularly in West Africa and all over the continent. But they gave after they took the dirty rocks, they crushed them, they polished them, they brought the rocks back in the form of coins, in the form of necklaces and various goods for other goods. And those goods were like cotton, tobacco, leather hides, various traded items. Salt was a big one. And these rocks, which are just dirty rocks that got polished, they lock them in a closet and they call it wealth, as gold, as it is today. So that led me to wanting to know more about this whole trading piece on a very high level. So it took me to going back to the expansion of the world, and the expansion of the world as we know it was birthed out of. Not as we know it, but the world as the world power as of today is the European expansion or colonialism. So when the Europeans left Europe, it took me to go back and really study European history. And so in that, I had to go back to the tool. So I re-looked at the Bible itself, the King James Version of the Bible. And what I then learned was that it wasn't a religious tool necessarily. You know, today we classify it as a religious tool, but more importantly, it was a legal document or a legal organ or instrument that is used even to this world, you know, as the world today. And so one thing I share with all of our staff and all of our people that work with us is that we need you to have a clear understanding of the King James Version of the Bible, not for its religious content, but for its legal application. So when you go to court, they have you put your hand on a book and say, "I promise you all the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth to help me God." And those that witnessed the inauguration of President Obama, they used Martin Luther King's Bible and had him give his oath to the office of the president. Well, that is an actual instrument beyond a religious tool. And if you don't understand it, you work at a disadvantage. If you're working at a disadvantage, you're also working at a level of incompetence. And if you're incompetent, what do? You waive your rights. And so if you're waiving your rights as a civilization or particularly as a group of people because you're incompetent of the legal document, you really don't have a claim and you can't provide a remedy for a solution.
Right.
So,
good teacher.
So all the listeners, if this phone goes dead and you don't hear nothing else from us, I would encourage you to go to Genesis, particularly Genesis chapter 1, verse 26. And I'm just going to read this real briefly to you, just so you have a good understanding of what I'm suggesting. And those that are online, which I think everyone may be or should be, or if not, you're listening on your phones or what have you, but you can just Google King James Version of the Bible, and you can click on Genesis chapter 1, and you go down to verse 26. It says, "And God said, let us make man in our image, after our likenesses, and let them have dominion over the fish of the seas." The fish of the seas are talking about the tilapia, the lobster, the catfish, the shrimp, all the fish in the sea, the mahi-mahi, over the fowl of the air, that's all the chickens, all the ducks, all the turkeys, all the eagles, all the hawks, and over the cattle, that's all the mules, all the cows, all the horses, all the goats, all the lambs, and over all the earth, that's all the copper, all the tin, all the zinc, all the platinum, and over every creeping thing that creepeth upon the earth. That's even including the human being. Over every creeping thing that creepeth upon the earth. And this document was given to Christopher Columbus, and prior to him, John Hawkins, for the point of this conversation, let's focus on Christopher Columbus, was given to Christopher Columbus from the Pope of Rome. So the Pope, who is the top dog, so to speak, the vicar of Christ, is giving it to the king, and the king is giving it to the let's call it the expeditionist or the guy, King James, who's now selling around the world to establish the new world utilizing this legal instrument. And in his mind, he's thinking these things to be the fact. So in 26:27 it says, so God created man in his own image. In the image of God created he him, male and female created he him then. And in 28 it says, God blessed them, and God said unto them, be fruitful and multiply and replenish the earth. That's a key thing, to replenish the earth and subdue it. And subdue it is almost like put it under your whole trance, put it under your control, and have dominion over the fish of the seas, over the fowl of the air, and over every living thing that moveth upon the earth. So when they showed up on the shores of West Africa, they showed and saw this labor to promote their economic program. They captured that labor under this idea that they're saying that over every living thing that moves upon the earth. And so in 29 it says, and God said, behold, I have given you every herb bearing seed. So that's all the cilantro, all the parsley, all the oregano, which is upon the earth, and every tree, which is fruit yielding seed. That's all the apples, all the tomatoes, all the bananas, all the pineapples. To you it shall be for meat. And to every beast of the earth, and to every fowl of the air, and to everything that moveth, that cometh upon the earth, wherein there is life, I have given you every herb for me, and it was so. So I'm going to put a comma here, but the point I'm trying to make is, if you're in trade or you're in business, and as the Honorable Elijah Muhammad has said, and many others, the Honorable Marcus Garvey, who I think is a genius, has said, that this is the cornerstone of what this new world, as we are living in this time, under the leadership of the European, is their tool. And the moment we really get to digest this in its full consciousness, you look around your room, including this phone that I'm talking to you on, is a rock called tantalite. And this rock that I'm holding up to my ear to communicate with you all is a rock that was sent to China. And I have an Apple phone, and so they modified the rock to receive frequency and data to send to you all. And now this broadcast is taking place all over the world by a rock. So this is having dominion over all the earth, and that is the rock itself. So I say to you all, in greetings and peace. And I know I probably wasn't supposed to go that long, but I just wanted to share. He asked a question, and I wanted to just answer it there, but I have some other things to share. But let me let the brother get in. Amen. Thank you, brother. And dialogue.
Brother Latron, I'm not kicking you off. You're fine. I just want to be able to ask you some questions here. I wanted let's engage. Let's engage. If you got a second, because this is important for our listening audience and those who will hear this broadcast later to get the information that you have. If you have a second.
Okay, I do. In fact, may I add one more thing since I got a second here? If you go to chapter 2 in Genesis and you go to number 5, okay? And it says, in every plant, so Genesis chapter 2, verse 5, it says, every plant of the field before it was in the earth. So that's before all the plants, and every herb of the field before it grew. So that's before all the cilantro. And for the Lord God, it's now all caps, Lord God had not caused it to rain upon the earth. Well, what that means is that it was before the sun, so there wasn't a sun. As you know, the rain is a result of condensation, of heating and cooling, and there was not a man to till the ground. So what that tell us is, when I saw that rock that the brother had in Congo, it told me that the only value in this world is man tilling the ground. Everything else is free. God gave it to us. And
right.
If everything is free and all it does is take labor, that tells me, when I look at a Coca-Cola company who owns, who are the largest sugar farmer in the world, and they sell sugar in the form of aluminum can, and they call it Coca-Cola, but it's just sugar cane, and they're the largest sugar farmers on the planet. The only thing it costs them for that sugar, for that Coca-Cola, is the labor it takes from milling it from a sugar cane into a liquid into aluminum can. And so when they decide to raise the price, they simply saying they want more for their labor. And so that's the framework of global trading. And if we're going to talk about trading, let's talk about it in that capacity.
Yes, sir. Absolutely. Let me let me press you on some questions here. First of all, thank you for the bio and the introduction, because that was well needed, and our people now have to be familiar with you, brothers and sisters. This is Brother Latron Price. They're based in Atlanta, Georgia, right now with us on the Black Power Radio. And I want to get into this. We're talking about trade and the cornerstone. Trade being the cornerstone of civilization and a tool for global supremacy. Now, you, sir, are a follower of the Most Honorable Elijah Muhammad, who we
had mentioned earlier in the show, and I was just sharing this not too long ago with the national chairman, Dr. Malik Zulu-Shabazz. In Message to the Black Man in America, this is page 194. The Most Honorable Elijah Muhammad lays out what he calls a sound economic plan. He has a part one and a part two, a sound economic plan. I'm going to read this to you, and I want to get your thoughts on it. As we get into this, trade, the cornerstone of civilization. He says, the economic plight of black people in this land has so long been neglected by so-called leaders that even our own people have forgotten its basic importance. Our economic position remains at the bottom of the ladder because of this ineffective leadership and because so many of our people ignore the basic rules of a healthy economic life. He says, we fail to develop self-leadership in economics. Now, I want to ask you, Brother Latron, because you, sir, are a man who has moved out on the program, carried out on the program of international trade, which anybody who's involved in the UNIA, the Honorable Marcus Mosiah Garvey, if you're involved in the Nation of Islam, the Most Honorable Elijah Muhammad, or the Minister Farrakhan, or Minister Silas Muhammad, or whoever you're with, or just a follower of those teachings, you know that you have to pledge yourself to get involved in international trade. Us in the New Black Panther Party, under the leadership of Dr. Malik Zulu-Shabazz and Honorable Dr. Khalid Muhammad, same thing, get involved in international trade and Pan-Africanism. So tell us, Brother Latron, what is your example? What do you think are the steps to having a healthy economic life, sir?
Okay. First of all, Brother Amin, and that whole sentiment of the reference to the Honorable Muhammad and other brothers that really were identifying the economic platform, particularly for the African. And to answer your question directly, what do I say? What are the steps? What are the things needed? First of all, I think if you're dealing in economics in general, you have to understand what economics is. And let's talk about the word eco, E-C-O. Eco is the environment around you. Economics is the accounting of the environment. So let's take, for instance, we take sand. Sand is in our environment. We heat sand up, we get glass. If you heat glass up, you get fiber optic cable that we use internet today. And the economics of it is the accounting of the sand or the fiber optic cable, of which many of us are using internet right now on. So if we're talking about economics, we have to talk about our local environment, particularly in the state of Georgia. If I was a person in Georgia and I was looking at an economic model, what would I do? The first thing I would do is I would contact Gary Black, who is the Department Secretary of Agriculture in the Department of Agriculture in the state of Georgia. He had all the agriculture for the state of Georgia. I would contact his office and I would say, hey, Gary Black, or where is there produce produced that's not being sold, that's being produced right here in Georgia? Now, I know the black farmers are here as well, and so I could contact them directly, but more importantly, I would like to have the statistical data of exactly what's produced, so I would work closely with the Secretary of Agriculture for the state of Georgia so I can get the exact information, what the yield schedules are, what are the outcomes, what are the inputs, and what's the forecast of the production. So let's say I'm going to focus on peanuts, I would contact those peanut farmers, and I would say, hey, Mr. Peanut Farmer, I would like to know how much of the product that you're not selling, or what is it that I can get from you, or what can I buy from you? And they would tell us what they have available. Then I would simply contact Snickers, or I contact Hershey's, or I contact an oil company that turns it into peanut oil, and I would say, hey, I have access to this amount of peanuts, and I would like to sell them to you. What would be the pricing? What's the process of becoming a vendor? How do I become a vendor there? And in that process, in that model, we just talked about the environment and the accounting of the environment around you. So, and one of the things I want to just add this to it is that Marcus Garvey, who was one of the most extraordinary visionaries with this particular idea of global trade, particularly a sounding board for trade in Africa and in South America, or they call it African diaspora, the suggestion, after understanding their experience, we would suggest that that everything don't have to go through the Black Star line. Because when J. Edgar Hoover decided that Marcus Garvey was a threat to the American society and the American way of life, they decided to neutralize based on what's, based on the knowledge that we have today, that he was neutralized, and neutralizing him through his investors and various other tools that were used. Well, we're suggesting that we broaden the scope. So everything don't have to go through my company, American Sales and Distribution. We believe that we should educate 1,000 of us out here that's contacting Gary's Black Office, that's contacting these farmers, that's contacting Alcoa and other mining companies that produce products that are being sold. And so that in the case that there is some sort of I'm going to use this in the context, because I don't think it's a real threat. I think that expansion of markets is the only solution to find sustainability. And what does that mean? Expansion of markets, such as expanding the India market, expanding the Asia market, and expanding the African market, is only good for the whole machine to work. Have the pendulum swing one way and stay at that on that side of the fence creates unbalance. At some point, it reaches a critical mass, and that mass then tilts the scale themselves. So, and I think that's happening in some degree, in many degrees, all around the world today, because of the position that the European has taken as it relates to global trade. And I think the pendulum is beginning to swing. Brother, to answer that question, and I hope I did answer it in it, but I went a little detailed into it. But, what are the steps? The steps are understanding what do you have access to? What is it that's in your environment? If you're going to be involved in economics, you have to be able to account for the environment first.
You got to straight up account for the environment. Okay. All right. Talk to us, sir, about some of the mistakes that we make. We're dealing here on the strong basis of a platform of Marx, Garvey, the Honorable Elijah Muhammad, and many other brilliant economists. More than that, but definitely brilliant economists who have given us an example. And both of them and others talk about that we spend beyond our means, and that we don't spend only when necessary. Why do you think it is, sir, that we spend beyond our means, or that many of our people try to live beyond our means and not according to our incomes?
Well, when we say we spend beyond our means, I think we spend, and I don't think it's necessarily beyond our means. I think we just spend. If it was beyond our means, we wouldn't be there anymore. So I think we spend in general. We just consistently spend. What we're spending our money on is the issue that we have to address.
Okay.
And particularly, why do we do that? Is because most of us are not aware. I give you an example. We produced a letter to LeBron James, who's a basketball. Everybody knows LeBron, who plays for Miami Heat. And in our letter to LeBron, I'm just going to read it to you, and just so that you have a understanding of what. When we spend beyond our means, and how that actually works. I'm sorry, I'm gonna pull this up. So, LeBron, who is a person who's a great athlete and has millions of dollars, is someone who is going to buy a nice home and is going to do all these extravagant lifestyle things that. I'm sorry, while I'm doing this, I wanted to pull this up so you have a good understanding of what I'm saying. He has a great lifestyle, but at the end of the day, what is he left with? So one day I happened to see his LeBron's on a Sprite ad now. Okay, so I'm gonna share with you all this letter real quick of what we say to our athletes. Okay, athletes, and not just athletes, but our community. Athletes are the gatherers, gathering millions of people to follow them and witness their talents on the court. However, we would like to share our point of view of the game and why athletes are paid millions of dollars to play basketball, a game, or a sport. We've posed the question why. The game outcome only produces emotions in a ring. Let's not forget All-Star Weekend filled with parties and excitement. While most people think that LeBron plays for the Miami franchise, the Heat, we know he really plays for the Farmers. One of them is Anheuser-Busch, who sells wheat in an aluminum can, also a mining company farming rice and corn, but for the point we're making wheat called Budweiser. The franchise he pays for or contracted with hire organizations like Nielsen that gives demographics and data of the following or the gathering. To the Farmers, providing information such as buying patterns, age, education, life expectancy, just to name a few. Please visit their website at www.nielsen, that's NIELSEN.com. Once the data is qualified, there's an evaluation of the gathering, and the value is given to the franchise as a marketeer of consumer goods. The Farmer then cuts the check to the franchise and hires a PR company or marketing firm to move the gathering, who is also at home watching TV or listening to the radio, inclusive of the greater population, in their direction. By the way, most of these farmers don't even like the sport. They like more exclusive sport, like equestrianism, that's horseback riding, or yachting or boating, or big game hunting, while selling more wheat, a.k.a. Budweiser, to the gathering. Well, we suggest a new structure, a new deal with the farmers in the franchise, which will create generational wealth for the family and for others, and open doors for others, people to succeed, receiving equity for their labor. The money is not the wealth; it's a tool. The wheat is the wealth, and is the only sustainable future because it is free. The Creator gave it to us all, and it only costs labor. The cost of raw goods or natural resources never change. So when the seller raises the price, someone is saying they want more for their labor. Well, consider partnering with farmers in Georgia. Gary Black, who is the Commissioner of Agriculture, he would be inclined to assist. In addition, we are also based in Georgia, the home of the Civil Rights Movement, which has opened the door for LeBron and many others to earn their millions and play games. Well, let's go tell Mr. Anheuser to buy your wheat for the next 100 years, so you can develop wealth for your beautiful babies when you're long gone. As you know, most athletes die broke, leaving generations left to fight for survival. Furthermore, we pray that they're given the knowledge. Furthermore, many pray that they're given this knowledge and that he's been blessed with. Brother, we suggest that you don't stop there. Organize the younger guys, the ones with the big egos, and tell Nike you know some cotton farmers and textile manufacturers in Georgia, Ohio, and in Africa, and you want them to buy your cotton and or sweatsuits in your contracts. Tom Valasek, who serves as Secretary of Agriculture in the U.S. Department of Agriculture in D.C., is looking for people like us to make formal requests. If you need assistance, we'll help. If the farmer the sugar farmer named Coca-Cola wants the gathering, let's tell them you want them to buy your sugar cane from the poor farmers in the Central Plateau of Haiti, the gateway to the transatlantic slave trade featuring labor. To broaden your reach, tell Coca-Cola and Budweiser to buy your bauxite, aluminum ore, from Guinea, West Africa, where Alcoa is. Alcoa is based the largest producer of aluminum. Brother, we pray that you understand what I'm suggesting, and if not, have your advisory team look at all the companies you're currently contracted with, and before you make your next deal, contact us directly and make your next deal competent and well-informed. You can have a wider impact in the world beyond sports and present progression through your talent. Do not allow the good old boys to blind you with money, cars, and homes. The real wealth is in the land. So change the hood by creating a job for your uneducated cousins while we all need your help. Talent is a blessing and a responsibility, so we suggest you act now. And so what I'm saying in this letter that we were just initially addressing it to LeBron, but now we've opened it up to all the athletes, and so we want to publish this to as a public document so that they get a real understanding of, you know, we buy cars, we buy Coca-Cola, we buy Kellogg's cornflakes, and we spend our money on these items, but we have no interest in them. nor do we have a clear understanding of how, I'm going to reference this as the economic value chain works. And here's the bottom line. One, you have the landowner. The landowner is the key component to the whole thing. So when you look around your room, everything from the clothes you have on your back to the phone that we're talking on to the computer that you're looking at to the floor to the chair to the desk that you're sitting at come from the land, all of it, including everything in your refrigerator. So if everything comes
That's
from
right.
the land, what happens next? It then goes to a processor. So if I have, let's say, wheat, it got to be processed. And once it's processed, then it goes to a manufacturer. The manufacturer then takes the processed wheat that's now in a usable form and manufactures a particular product. Once the product is manufactured, then what happens? It goes to a wholesaler. And the wholesaler then takes it and then begin to send it to distributors who are getting it to the retail centers that eventually end up at your home or in your garage or in your possession. So if we understand the value chain, of the economic value chain, particularly starting with the landowner, we have to declare who is the landowner and why is the landowner so has such an impact. Well, let's start with this, if that's the case. If you're online, everyone, please just Google a company called Cargill. Okay, Cargill is spelled, hang on, let me pull this up real quick. Hang on 1 second. C-A-R-G-I-L-L. I'm pulling it up myself, so please forgive me. If you had a chance to, let's Google Cargill. So it's C-A-R-G-I-L-L. And Cargill, which is one of the world's largest companies in the world, and if you click on Cargill at a glance on the first page, it says Cargill is an international producer and marketer of food, agriculture, financial, and industrial products and services, founded in 1865, our privately held company enjoys. Remember that the slavery ended in 1865. I don't know if you guys know if you remember that or not, but if you do, that's when your boy Abraham and his crew. Well, what happened? They decided that they needed to put corporations in place on how to deal with this retention of land and wealth. And so this retention of land and wealth was a result of the end of the Civil War, which ultimately was the beginning of the Revolutionary War. So this is 1865, this company Cargill. This is a company that's owned by the British Crown today. The landowners never changed. Remember, when they gave us freedom, they didn't give us land. They kept the land, and they never changed title. So this Cargill still owned land from 1865 that our ancestors worked. So who is Cargill? Now, if you guys are online now, C-A-R-G-I-L-L is the name of the company. And if you look at, if you click on our company and who they are, it'll give you more detail on them. And I would click on their history if I was you. Who is their history? Let's talk about it. Explore the roots of Cargill, 1865 to present day. And it talks about Cargill as a long, rich heritage, starting with W.W. Cargill's first grain storage facility in North America frontier in 1865. Well, yeah, he had a grain storage, but he owned more slaves. And not only slaves, but he had more labor, and he had more land. And this is the one of the breadbasket companies of the world. And I would encourage you to learn more about them. Sorry,
yes, sir.
I just wanted to answer that question, and I probably went too
yes,
far.
Yes, sir. No. Yes, sir. You're gonna give us enough. We're gonna be so full by the time it's over. Let me ask you this. Now we have a lot of, and we're gonna take your calls before I even get into that, brothers and sisters. We're right at the top of the hour, and you're tuned in to Black Power Radio with our brother Latron Price out of Atlanta, Georgia, black economist, a businessman, international trade, a man who we want to listen to. We're getting the information from him right now. And Brother Latron, you have a lot of people on the line right now who are interested in starting their own business. Many of us on the line, black nationalists and those who want to do for ourselves and those who are, tired of necessarily working for somebody else, as they call it. And you yourself, sir, you have developed a level of economic security and sanctity and done for yourself. Talk to us a little bit about your struggles beginning out and starting to do for self
and give us some common sense steps on how to get started here in 2013.
Okay. First of all, brother, and thank you, and the listening audience, you know, the accolades are awesome. However, this is a real world that we all in, and this is a continued struggle for every one of us.
Sir.
I have not found my freedom in the sense that I'm a landowner, in the capacity that land ownership would say what I would consider to be real freedom. You know, and we have a beautiful family. We're able to provide for our family, and how if I would suggest a way that someone would be able to provide for their family and be able to start a business and start from a very grassroots process. Well, first of all, again, the very first thing is read Genesis and understand it clearly, because that is the tool, that is the legal instrument that governs business. Then I would suggest that you contact your local state government and your Secretary of State office and incorporate yourself. There are several things and we would do. However, just for the lack of time I want to go into too detail on a type of corporation, but you know, organize yourself as an illegal entity or as an organization. And once you have, you can go to your Secretary of State website, and a lot of states do it online. Then after you have a legal entity, try to take an idea on what it is you want to do. I gave a suggestion to a group up in Detroit. They had contacted me and said, "Hey, Latron, you know, we want to own business and we're not sure what to do." And so, this particular group was a nonprofit organization that found most of their money by doing fundraisers. I call it classic begging, and I really am not with that. I tried that before, and I'm not with that. But they did it by fundraisers and asking people to contribute. And I said to them, "Well,
you're against the fundraiser."
I'm against it. I mean, let me say it like this: I'm just not good at it. I'm not against it. I'm just not good at it. What I suggested to them, since it was an organization, I said, "Well, you guys gather clothes all the time, and you take these clothes and you give them away to different people. Well, why don't you do this? Get your clothes, gather your clothes together, okay? I think at the time they had like two containers of clothes. So I said, separate the clothes. Put all the cottons with the cottons, put all the polyesters with the polyester, put all the denim with the denim, and get a solution. It's a liquid solution, and I don't want to give this information because they're going to compete with somebody else's business, but I'm giving you an overall idea. Get the solution that's mainly composed of water and soak the clothes in them, so soak all the cottons in it. Well, when you soak them in cotton, it begins to break them down back to a cotton form, and then dry them out. So now you're left with just pure cotton. So now you have a whole container load of cotton that you gathered for free, and now you can just resell it to the markets. And you just go online and contact just Google people who buy cotton, particularly in your state. If you got manufacturers there, contact those manufacturers and sell them that raw cotton or that raw denim or polyester or neon. Those are easy business tools for someone who just got labor and they're looking to collect something and make some money with it. That's an idea. Other ideas are, I know a lot of people that go to the flea market. And so they're at the flea market and they're trading shea butter, they're trading incense and various products. Mm-hmm. One of the things that I would strongly suggest is you revisit how you market your product. Because you're competing in a market where, you know, the guy in the booth next door is selling the same purse or they sell the same shoes, the Air Force Ones are selling the same incense, and if pretty much one, two major suppliers are supplying all the, I'm going to call it the day-to-day merchants, it's very competitive. So we have to force our prices down. Well, my suggestion would be to you to not just look for the guy next door to buy your product, But get online and find a company who use shea butter in their products, such as, let's say, Johnson & Johnson, let's say Orvolet, let's say these various institutional groups, and find out what and you want to get you want to become a vendor to them to sell them products. So instead of you competing with the guy in the booth next door to you, get online and call the companies. Overcome your fear of no and just take the call and say, hey, Procter & Gamble, based out of Missouri, or you know, or go find a particular location that buys your particular product and say, hey, I want to I have product for sale. How do I become a vendor? And once you become a vendor, they send you an email, or you can go online. They usually have the vendor list there, and you fill out that vendor form, and you begin to market your product to them. You identify your pricing from your supplier. In the beginning, your pricing may be too high for them, not for shea butter. By the way, shea butter is a growing commodity and is one of the one butters, like cocoa butter and those types of things, that's not traded on the European Stock Exchange yet, or they have what's called a cocoa board. So they don't have a shea butter board yet, but somebody's going to develop it. So eventually, and one of the things about shea butter particularly, it's a barrier to entry. I believe it takes 50 years or 100 years or something like that before the shea butter nut actually produces butter. So because there's this huge barrier to entry, and it really primarily grows across Africa and in Sub-Sahara, there's a huge barrier there. So you have an advantage. Particularly contacting your supplier and saying, hey, I can sell a whole truckload now, or I can sell two truckloads, so you can be involved in the actual model of selling your butter or your products. I hope that answers the question. I'm just taking random ideas.
That's great.
One other thing I would suggest to you is that step outside of the conventional business practice, such as going to the flea market and selling your goods and wares. Right now, if you look into any city, here's a great example, and I'm going to give this up. This is one of the things that our company does. We have a relationship where we sell gases. We knew that there wasn't any other black businesses in the business of selling gas, such as oxygen, such as carbon, such as various containerized gases. And we began to go to hospitals, getting on their vendor list to supply those gases.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. Number to call is 646-478-4447, 646-478-4447. We want to take your questions. You're on live with Brother Latron Price. He's talking to us about trade, the cornerstone of civilization. We got so much to get into, so much more to get into. International trade. We got to touch that, Brother Latron, but I want to open up some of these lines here because the phone line is blowing up, and brothers and sisters want to know about this economics. They want to know about trade. We want to develop some principles in our own everyday life. Let me go to this first call here, area code 912-424. Area code 912-424. You're on live with Black Power Radio and our brother Latron Price. Give us your question, your comment, please. Black Power. Area code 912-424. Last chance. You're on live with Latron Price. Okay, that call dropped out. Maybe just been listening. All right, let's go. Area code 229-296. You're on live. Black Power Radio. I'm with Latron Price. Your question, your comment, please. Black Power. We home. We home. 229-296, you're on live. Black Power, do you got a question or comment? May just be listening, Brother Latron. Let me move on down. Area code 562-239. 562-239, you're on live. Black Power, give us your question, your comment, please. Black Power.
I'm Black Power, Brother Sean. I'm Brother Nash,
hey.
Spokesman, Brother Vernon
Black
here
Power.
In LA.
Black Power, Brother Vernon. How you doing, brother?
Oh, brother, on the job, bro. I just snuck off, and I'm truly enjoying my brother here because, brother, he is a prime example of that knowledge is power, brother, and I'm loving it. But I just wanted to know, as far as, does brother have a site that I could go to where I could read up, because I really don't have time for much of a question. I mean, it would just take so long. But do you have a site or anything I can go to as far as a computer site or something?
Yes, sir. I work have two sites I'm going to suggest you to. One, I'm going to send you to the Joe Beasley Foundation website.
Well, one more time.
The Joe Beasley Foundation website. So you go to J-O-E, Beasley, B-E-A-S-L-E-Y, foundation.org.
Yes,
JoeBeasleyFoundation.org.
.org?
So, and then in addition to that, you can go to ASDS, ASDS-trade.com. That's ASDS-trade.com. And then also, friend me on Facebook, brother, Latron Price. That's L-A-T-R-O-N, last name Price, P-R-I-C-E.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir, brother. And brother, thank you for this evening, brother. And thank you for that knowledge. And you're a knowledgeable brother, man. It's just so, but it's just like years ago, a group had a song out, brother. It's too much information running through my brain. I got to take a break, brother.
Amen, amen. Well, thank
hey,
you, family. And I'm sorry.
Hey, brother, Brother Nazareth spoke to me. After this, brother,
yes,
you need to take a nap, brother. You got to lay
oh,
down.
Oh, yes, sir.
You know?
Yeah, brother. Brother Latron is laying it out there for you. Brother Latron, this
yes,
is Brother Vernon. This is Brother Vernon X out of the West Coast. He's our Los Angeles Minister of Culture. He's also a student of the Most Honorable Elijah Muhammad, Minister of Farrakhan. And so, you know, he can relate very much to what you were saying about your beginnings and your start in the nation, how you taking this program and moved out. And so you all got to connect. But you're right, brother.
Yeah,
I'm at the,
you,
go ahead, sir.
And before you leave, brother, I know you're at work. You said you're on the, at the job. Before you leave, I'm sure I don't know if you're familiar with Brother Charles Aikens. Brother Charles X and Brother Harry Muhammad. I think they're heading an economic program for the nation, or they're developing an economic program for the nation. They introduced a coin at the Savior's Day, I believe.
Go ahead, brother. I'm sorry.
Yeah, they're based in Atlanta, and I've been advising them. And let me get it straight for the record. First of all, I was introduced to the black world through the Honorable Elijah Muhammad and Honorable Minister Farrakhan through my brother Tommy Muhammad. But I didn't actually register the nation. I would always make the functions, and I did read Message to the Black Men. And but for whatever reason, Allah had me on a different mission to go learn the world from a different capacity. And so, at the same time,
black
I'm very, very, very humble.
You're part of the
course,
black
brother,
nation.
Of course.
You're part of the
Can
black
I ask you
nation.
One question?
Yeah, go right ahead, Brother Vernon.
Brother Nashville Smoker, go ahead. I'm sorry, brother.
No. I was just saying he's a part of the black nation. The Honorable Elijah Muhammad said that's the nation, the black people. So you're all right, brother. You family. Go right ahead, Brother Vernon.
Yes, sir. No, brother, I heard you say something earlier. You said true power. You said true economic power is land ownership. You know what I mean? You said that's truly where it starts, is owning land.
Mm. Mm.
Is that what you said earlier?
Yes, sir. Absolutely. Absolutely. If you, I just encourage everyone that's listening to just Google the Fortune 100. And every
Fortune
one of 100. Them are involved. The Fortune 100. That's on Fortune Magazine and Fortune website. Every one of those companies are involved in some form of land ownership. That's the only way it works. God gave us all the matter for free, all the gold for free, all the copper for free, all the tin, all the zinc. The only wealth is in the labor of processing that land, and that creates the exchange or the economies.
What you're saying, brother, is everything we need is in the land, and if you own the land, there you go.
That's right. You know, brother,
well,
in Zimbabwe. Yes, sir. I was going
to
comment just briefly. I know you got to go, family. Brother Mugabe in Zimbabwe, very, very, very strategic move of reclaiming the land for the Zimbabwe people. And what he's done is set the stage for other countries in Africa to claim the land in the benefit of their people, because that is ultimately where their wealth is. Obviously, that created a lot of political issues around the world, but primarily because there's a challenge over the land. And when you challenge the land, the existing economic models have to react because that changes a wealth model. And the wealth model is coming to a head one day or another. It's coming to a head. And the internet alone allows us to have flow of information to be able to share on how the use of the land. So if you just Google how to make shea butter, how to make Kellogg's cornflakes, how to make a lamp, how to make a wood table, how to make a chair, you will find a very simple step-by-step YouTube that tell you how to do it.
Mm. And like you said about brother Mugabe in Zimbabwe, he's reclaiming the land that was stolen in the first place, that was taken in the first place. So he's taking back land that was already there.
Yeah, absolutely. He has become competent, and as I said before, if you're not competent, you waive your right. And he has become competent of the land. And as his competence grows, nations around him, and particularly in East Africa, such as Zambia, such as Burundi,
Tanzania.
Such as Tanzania,
right.
South Africa, Rwanda, they're all coming to a consciousness of competence over land ownership.
Mm, brother, thank you so much. You have a good evening. Assalamu alaikum.
Wa alaikum salam. You have a wonderful evening yourself, brother.
All right, Brother Vernon, thank you. Thank you so much for your participation. Hope we all got that website. We'll get you to say that again at the end of the hour here. Brother, we'll get you to say it again so the people can get it, because I know, you know, we're kind of getting through it, but we're going to make sure everybody get this information. Number to call, 646-478-4447, 646-478-4447. Brother Latron, let's take another call here at area code 215-982. You're on live with Black Power Radio and our brother Latron Price. Your question, your comment, please, Black Power. 215-982, you're on live. Question or comment?
Come on down, brother. We here. We listen to you.
Black right, Power, brother. Black Power.
Hey,
had
Black
to un-
Power.
I had to get up and unmute the telephone. It's a powerful economic message. Thank you, Brother Sean. And I just got on a little late, so I'll just be tuning in and trying to get in, you know, just trying to get as much information as I can.
Okay, sir. All
brother
right.
Latron,
appreciate
brother.
It.
It's Brother Latron. A pleasure. Thank you for tuning in, and thank you for your patience and listening, brother. Thank you,
yes,
sir.
Thank you for your information. I'm Brother Aru Kahuti from Philadelphia. Black Power.
Amen. Nice to meet you, brother. Black Power.
Black Power. That's Brother Aru Kahuti, Philadelphia, PA. That's our brother there. He's listening. He's getting this information. He's soaking it in. He's going to be one of the brothers that by the grace of God, rolls out with us to Azania, South Africa in a few weeks, Brother Latron. So we're moving out. Let's take another call here. Area code 347-272. Area code 347-272. You're on live. This is Black Power Radio on with Latron Price talking about trade, the cornerstone of civilization. Black Power, give us your question, your comment.
Black Power, this is Brother Shah from Queens, New York. First,
Black Power, Brother Shah, Queens. Going on.
Peace, brother. I'd like to give a shout out to my national spokesman, Brother Sean Kwali, and my national
Sir.
Chairman, Malik Zulu Shabazz, and Brother
Sir.
Sean Trice. Boy, man, you got the science, man. You got me amped up. You got me hyped up with direct solutions. You know, thank you for sharing the knowledge of how to reuse these clothes, man. There's a lot of clothes, and I've been trying to figure out what should I do with these clothes. You know
Sir.
What I'm saying? To reuse such a wasted resource. Next thing I want to know is what we could do with the leaves and the grass, brother. You know, as the land is the wealth, and as you said, I agree, the land produces so much. But my main question to you, my brother Latron, is how are we going to get a lot of these lazy brothers out here, as Malik Zulu Shabazz like to say, the harvest is right. But how are we going to get these lazy brothers?
Brother Shah, you still with us?
I think we lost him.
Hello?
Okay, well, I think, yeah, can you hear us, Brother Shah?
Yes, I got you, brother. I hear you.
All right, your phone, it went out for a second. Go ahead and repeat your question, sir.
What I want to know is like how our national chairman says the harvest is right. We need the brothers out here to help us harvest it. How are we going to get a lot of these lazy brothers to work together and harvest this harvest and create wealth so we can have a nation of our own?
Great, well, first of all, brother, amen. I'm going to attempt to address the question. I don't know if I can answer that question. That's a very tough one. Only God in the universe can motivate a human being. However, what I would suggest is those that understand it have to be motivated by inspiration. Minister Farrakhan motivates people all over the globe who were not motivated before they heard his message. To me, the motivation, and like I said, I'm going to try to address the question. To me, the motivation comes from action. And if you're an actioneer, people will automatically be attracted to you. And how you motivate them is by presenting a solution or an example. So being that the brothers in New York, first of all, New York, the state of New York is one of the largest dairy farmers in the country. In upstate New York, they produce a lot of dairy farms. What make your situation very complicated, not complicated, but create obstacles for you is that your capital, Albany, is so far away from the concentration of the people. So Albany, New York, which is where the Department of Ag is for the state of New York, and that's where most of the decisions made are up in New York, up in Albany for the state, I would suggest that you start there. And don't start from a confrontational perspective. Start from an informative or informational perspective. One of the things that we are, as African and descendants of slaves, are up against is emotions. And the moment we begin to realize that it's not about emotions, nor is slavery about race, it is simply an economic program. We can address our community and we can address our issues better, particularly, as you pointed out, the ones of us who are lazy. And I wouldn't necessarily categorize them as lazy, but more of in trauma, in a state of trauma. So what I'm suggesting is that if we digress and let's look at the transatlantic slave trade away from emotions, let's detach every emotion from it as a descendant and look at it for an economic model. We know the real wealth is in the land, but the only real value in wealth is the labor. So when Christopher Columbus landed in Elmina Castle in Ghana, West Africa, he loaded his ship with slaves. He loaded his machinery. And when his slavery or his machines landed in Española, which is one half the DR and one half is Haiti, and he landed on the island, his slave or his laborers were there to harvest or to create the trade. And I want to go back to this real quick, brother, because I think it's going to help me hit directly on your question is, so now that we're detaching the emotional context and we're dealing strictly with the economic model, that machinery was producing cotton, sugarcane, tobacco, teas, coffee, and various other products. And in fact, if we really get a good clue of it and really understand it from an economic perspective, as it relates to slavery, we realize that race played no part in it whatsoever. Only part that race played was in the middle management stage. And the middle management stage is the uneducated white who was hired as the overseer that held the whip on his back. And so race was only to divide the classism, meaning that the middle management, or let's call them the overseer that was hired by the landowners, who was hired by the king, who was hired by the pope. Race played a part at that level. And so as it relates to motivating our community, when those that are unmotivated or dealing with large-scale trauma are unproductive, need a motivation, and that motivation is going to reside in your ability to show an example and to clearly understand that we got to rise above race, we got to rise above these emotions, and deal with the idea that the European left Europe challenging the Indian, the Asian, the African, and the other indigenous people of the earth. and their superiority, and obviously they were superior because they run it today, in their superiority of knowledge, they were able to capture the labor and put the labor to work by peer example. Like, it, meaning that when Christopher Columbus picked up those slaves, he took them to the fields. He had them grow the cotton. Let's use a very good example. He had them grow the tea. The tea came to Boston, and where the Boston Tea Party popped off, because when the ship landed in Boston, the king had his guard there to count the boxes of tea so they can collect their duty at the customs. And the king said that we have to raise the tax on the duty for the tea because they were trying to rebuild the coffers or the treasury of England at the time. And the merchants who brought back that tea was upset, and they said, hell no, we don't want it. We agreed to pay you, I'm just going to paraphrase here, we agreed to pay you $2, and you're asking for $6. And so they decided to have what's called now the Boston Tea Party, meaning that the king said that you can't bring it into the country. And they said, well, you're not going to have, because they tried to confiscate the tea, and they said, well, you're not going to have the tea either. We're going to throw it into the water. And so next thing you know, you had a tea party, and what happens next? When you arguing over money, somebody's going to pop off a gun. So next thing you know, they had the whole pop off of the Boston Tea Party. These merchants who wanted their bread for the slave that the labor, the economic model, produced. So my question, to answer your question, brother, and I'm sorry to go in that, but I just want to give you a very clear understanding.
It's all right, brother. I appreciate it, man. Break it down.
Okay, the best example is being able to produce an economic model that works. And so if you're able to take that as an economic model, and particularly in the state of New York, you have to get the information and you have to be prepared for it. And then you'll see brothers begin to follow you, very similar to what many, many successful people have been able to do in gathering men and women.
Oh, man, I appreciate it, man. That's very insightful. Sounds very much on point. I'm going to definitely try that model. Appreciate that, Brother Latron.
Yes, sir.
Okay, Brother Shaw, appreciate your question, and thank you so much. Brother Shaw, Queens, New York. Queens, New York, stand up. Definitely, you dropping on this, Brother Latron. I would take some variance with you on the superiority part. You know, this is Black Power Radio. I got the point on that. I got it. But you know this white man used technology against the people, black, brown, red, and yellow, even some white. And I don't know if I would call technology superior, but we with you.
let me address that just real briefly.
Yes, sir.
First of all, absolutely. And again, technology is only effective when you're not knowledgeable. And
that's
the
right.
Only shield, as I shared with my brother Malik and Brother Shabazz, the only shield that we have is the tree of knowledge. And the shield deflects that technology. And if you're not prepared with the right shield, you're going to fall into the loop of lack of knowledge, and you become inferior.
There it is. As Chuck D said, there it is. There you have it. Let's go to the next caller. Hey, code 504-432. You're on live with Black Power Radio and our brother Latron Price. Give us your question, your comment. Black Power,
Soul Power.
Soul Power, Black Power. What's going on, my brother? How are you?
I'm doing all right, my brother. Now, this is a question that I really want to ask. Either one of y'all can answer it. Do you believe in the school system? Do you think they should have, like, trades? Because any and everybody is not going to go to college. But, look, when you come out of high school, you have a trade like auto mechanic, plumbing, brick mason, carpentry, agriculture. Do you think they need that back in the curriculum?
Do we
brother,
need agriculture?
Would you like to take that, or you like to take that?
No, go right ahead, Latron. Please.
Okay. You're asking one of the classic questions that W.E. Du Bois and Booker T. Washington had such a wonderful debate about. And I think a lot of us learned a lot of that. in their arguments of being able to have a trade in the educational system, or is it based on I'm drawing a mental blank. I apologize. Or if it's based on knowledge, it's not knowledge. That's not the key. I'm so sorry, brother. I just had a mental collapse, but we good. But this is a classic debate between the two. And so to answer your question, brother, I'm a believer, particularly not just believer. I am a subscriber to the talents of individuals, and that means that some people are better at construction and some people are better at accounting. So I am one who says, yes, that should be a part of our curriculum because it's, as my grandmother used to say, it takes a construction man, it takes a salesman, it takes a police officer and a fireman to make the whole world go round and various others. But her point was it takes all of us to do different talents and different different experiences and different tools that we're good at. And so as it relates to agriculture, as it relates to carpentry, as it relates to these various trades, I think that if your talent is you're good at woodworking, you should specialize in it, and you should make that your. I think you could make that your specialty. And so my answer to that is yes. As it relates to the school system in general, I think you asked the question, what do we think about the school system? I'm going to start from a very high level and say that the school system is a learning ground to work for corporations. Just think of it this way, first of all, let's digress. The curriculums themselves, as relates to the textbook, as it relates to the core study work, they are given to the students, and there's a parameter given from the school on the coursework. And this has been a long fight, particularly in the African community, because we are argue that it's inefficient and ineffective, particularly for our babies. And I wholeheartedly agree with it. And not only do I wholeheartedly agree with that, I do like the state of Georgia that allows you to do homeschooling for your child. So you can just take your child all the way out the public school system and homeschool your child. And as long as they're able to meet the tested requirements, they're able to advance to the different grades. So I think, and this is very interesting because this is in very Republican states, I'm going to say the classic European states that really are not, they're very, very conservative. They have the rules designed for their children. So if you find those states, you will find a very common thread as it relates to the educational system that they are a lot more liberal with the family being able to educate their children. So I hope that answers the question. But as it relates to trades and agriculture, carpentry, and various woodworking and metalworking and those types of things, I agree there should be some focus on those schools, on those trades, and I support that train of thought.
Okay, well, Brother Sean, you're doing a good job.
Thank you.
A good job with the party. Brother, I mean, I want to ask you this. How can I get down with you all?
Okay.
You're asking me, brother? Brother,
yes.
Okay. What I would do is I'll just contact you direct. I got your number.
Okay.
I got your number. I will contact you direct. Me and you would talk. Let's talk sometime tomorrow. You free tomorrow?
Well, tomorrow I will be working, but you can call me around 6. See, 6, this would be Central Time, so maybe you in New York?
Yeah, I'm on Eastern Time.
Okay, so when it's 7 around your time, call me around 6.
All right, you got it. You got it from me. Look for my call.
All right, bud.
All right, appreciate it, Black. Appreciate
it. Black power.
Black power and soul power.
Brother Latron Price, you're touching the globe, brother, and people are very thoroughly inspired by what you're saying right now. We're right at about 15 minutes left in the radio broadcast for Black Power Radio. I wanted to open this up for your final closing comments here, sir.
Okay. Well, to all the listeners and those that didn't get to ask questions that are there online, I definitely appreciate you. And if you have any questions, please send them into the radio station, and Brother Malik and others will be able to get me the questions. I'll be happy to answer them. And also, you can reach me if you want to Facebook friend me or tweet me. You know, we do Twitter as well. You can follow us on Twitter at Latron Price or Universal Thought. But you put Latron Price in, you'll see us there. Or you can go on to Facebook and you put Latron Price on Facebook, and you can link up with us there as well on Facebook. As it relates to our company website, it's American Sales and Distribution Services. That's ASDS. -trade.com. That's ASDS-trade.com. And I want to share with my family. There's an interesting progression that the black world is going through. And the progression that I'm referencing is there are large amounts of us who are beginning to travel around the world. And as the brothers in the New Black Panther Party begin to embark their mission on arriving on the continent of Africa, there's this experience or this is idea that when they get there, they'll feel a sense of nostalgia that they've made it back to the motherland. And I want to share with our family that that's true. There is a nostalgia that you feel, and there is a welcoming that you feel in the air. However, I would also say to you that when you go to Africa, you would see that a hill is a hill, a rock a rock, and a tree is a tree, no matter where you're at on the continent. So your sense of nostalgia can take place right here in South Georgia or right in D.C. or right in Philadelphia or wherever you're at. Once you realize that the globe is your home and that the resources of the planet is your home. And one of the things that I did initially is I invested a lot of time and energy trying to do trade in Africa and focused on Africa, which absolutely I encourage you to. But you can't do that without having a very sound foundation on where you're at today. So my empathy goes out, not empathy, my encouragement, I apologize, my encouragement goes out to any brother that makes it to the continent. But more importantly, I have to say, I stress with you, look at your door, front door, and step outside and make your movement there. And when you make your movement right at your front door at home, where you're resting your head on a daily basis and you have stability in a foundation, you'll be able to impact the whole globe, and you'll be able to impact Africa a lot better. And then you also realize once you get there, their condition is very similar to your condition here in North America as it relates to poverty, as it relates to the necessities it takes to survive. And one of the things I experienced when I was in Ghana particularly, I was in the Gambia, and I'd gone to a place called Beaufort, which is an orphanage there. And right outside of there, there's some small, shanty-like shack homes there. And I was looking at the poverty that these people lived in. And, I'm from the neighborhood, meaning that, you know, we're not from that blue blood pedigree of black America. We're from the neighborhood. Let me just say it like that. So when you're from the neighborhood, you have a sense of, you have your idea of poverty. But when you go and see it in that condition that those, you know, people are in Africa, and not just Africa, in other parts of the world, you get to really understand poverty, and so you realize that you got a lot more to work with right at your front door. So in closing, In closing, I encourage all of our family to take the trip home and make sure you touch the land and you feel it and you embrace the people and you overcome your fear when you see the poverty, because you have two types of experiences. One, you have one guy that say, okay, there's no conveniences, so I'm not happy because everything is inconvenient. And then you have some people who see the opportunity. And so in the opportunity, you go there and you see these wonderful opportunities, like, wow, you know, if I could just put running water here, or if I could just put some lights here, or put a power plant here, or do these various wonderful, great ideas and things that you know that are needs. Those things are wonderful and great, but you can't do it'd be very difficult to accomplish those things when your home, where you live at today, you are working at a disadvantage. Your foundation is not strong. So, you know, I encourage our people to get involved in business right here. I encourage our people to not only get involved in business right here, but they go to their local Kroger's. You try to sell them fish. You try to sell them bananas. You try to get connections on supplies or products. I don't care if it's bolts or screws or even if it's just wood. Whatever it is, I encourage you to buy a product and sell a product. Take your margin out the middle and go to work.
Absolutely, absolutely. We got one more caller here for you, brother Latron. Let's take it. Eric code 347-664. Eric code 347-664. You're on live Black Power Radio, brother Latron Price. We're talking trade, the cornerstone of civilization. Talk to us, Black Power. Caller, you're on live 347-664. Your mic's open. Maybe they just listen there, Brother Latron. Eric Cole, 214-672. 214-672, you're on live. Black Power Radio, Brother Latron Price. Talk to us, Black Power. We're talking about trade and black economics. Go for it.
Hey, Black Power, Brother Sean Kwali and Brother Latron. How y'all doing today?
Hey, doing fine, my brother. How
are
you,
sir? Very well, brother.
Fine. Brother Latron, this is Brother Hakeem Muhammad, Supreme Captain of the New Black Panther Party. I stay in Ghana. I live in Kumasi, the Ashanti region. We call it the Paramount. The reason we call it the Paramount is because we are the chief. I'm called the Unkoswahili. I'm the chief of development. My nephew is the king who owns the gold. I bought this chief as the title, and what you're saying is true very much. When I first went to Ghana, I had a yearning to learn about our people, and I went to embrace our culture and learn. When Obama came to El Mino, the slave castle, where my wife is taking me there, and I know what you're saying and feeling is true. Our people, once we are grounded here, we can take what we have over there, because there is no economical program for us to capitalize unless we are prepared here to go there and deal with them. It's like secondhand goods. We take them there. We ship here from Texas. If it's just 20 pounds, 15 pounds, clean women panties, bras, T-shirts, black pants, we bundle it up and we ship it to them. We have people who buy our containers as it's on the ocean coming there. There are people that are inside the ports and stuff. We have people to meet them. Bicycles, people don't want 600 of them at a container. We ship them, not as an individual, but as collective people who come together. We help the economical program in Ghana to get this kind of stuff together. We call it waste management. Some people call it imported export. It's called waste management. And we ship this kind of stuff to those people. They clean it up and use it. I really appreciate what you're doing. Our national chairman has great admiration for bringing you on. Dr. Sterling Malik Zulu Shabazz and Brother Sean Kwali is definitely a man of the hour for bringing these kind of deeds to our people, because we're in need, acquiring minds that need to know these kind of things. I really, really have a lot of support for you, brother, and we appreciate the time and the effort that you put in to share with our people, to show them that our people are in need of us, to teach them these kind of things. A lot of people don't know and they don't understand, and since you're on a universal level, you specialize in this, we're praying to Almighty God a lot that he will let our people know to seek after the substance of learning, and David Walker said in his field to the government, they must crawl through mud and mirrors to the feet of a learned man like yourself. Keep doing what you're doing, because we, the New Black Panther Party, need you. Me, myself, I come up under the best of the teachers. They always took us big brothers and made us muscles. So, evidently, you got to be a small frame brother because you got a big knowledge and a big mind. So thank you very much for helping us. We appreciate your support. We support you. Stay black and stay strong, because we need you in this day and time. Black power, sir.
Amen, amen. Thank you, family. Thank you, family.
All right. Black power, this brother. Hakeem Muhammad, he's down in Dallas, Texas. Dallas, Texas. The black family's coming together. And as I told you, Brother Latron, we're in all parts of the globe. But certainly, brother, we're here at the last 5 minutes of the show, and I definitely want to thank you. I know that you, you know, there's always more that you could say, but you laid a lot out for us tonight. You've laid a lot out for us tonight, and I definitely want you to give the website out again, give both your websites out again, your Facebook page, and any other relevant information so we can network with you. I'm going to send you a request myself on Facebook.
Okay, thank you, brother. Yeah, first of all, let me give out the Joe Beasley Foundation website. That's J-O-E Beasley, B-E-A-S-L-E-Y. That's J-O-E B-E-A-S-L-E-Y Foundation.org. Joe Beasley Foundation.org. Joe Beasley is a hero. He's also a brother who heads the Southern region of the Rainbow Push Coalition. And brother, you got to bring me back on again so I can really give some information on Joe Beasley. I know our subject tonight was trade, and so we didn't get to go into a lot more of there's so much more about Mr. Beasley, who's such an inspiration to me and to many, many others around the world. But go to JoeBeasleyFoundation.org website, and then our business, which is American Sales and Distribution Services.com. That's ASDS-trade.com. ASDS-trade.com. And feel free to link me on Facebook at Latron Price. Facebook, I think it's just go in there and put Latron Price Atlanta, and you'll see me there. I think my picture this week I got some sunglasses on, and I believe I'm in Ghana. Yeah, I believe that's a picture in Ghana. So the black man with glasses, you know, it looked like I got some paper when you see that picture, but I'm definitely not a capitalist like that. I'm a person who shares the wealth and shares the knowledge, and try to teach my brothers how to fish. So that's who I am. A pleasure to meet you all. And Brother Malik Shabazz, I don't know if you're online with us. Is Brother Malik still with us?
He's somewhere listening, definitely.
Okay. And Brother Hashim. Brother Hashim, who brought me on, I'm giving a bow, brother, as you do in a rightful manner. I give a bow to you, brother, and thank you humbly for bringing me on and introducing me, Brother Malik, again. And more importantly, I give praise to the Creator of the universe, however you call him or what you call him to be. Because I think we're all being blessed with an amazing wisdom. And, brother, when you bring me back on, I want to share some of that insight as it relates to the creation itself. Because the true economics are really buried in the understanding of the creation.
Certainly. You got that. We're going to network. We're going to link up on Facebook and link up together. And exchange some information. You got that from me. We definitely will have you back on to get deep into this subject and other subjects.
Amen. Amen, brother. Amen.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. So thank you. Thank you so much, Brother Latron Price. May the God bless you with a successful night and a successful life and year, of course. And we'll bring you back on Black Power Radio to drop some more of that science on us, brother. Much love to you, brother. Peace and blessings. Black Power to you.
Black Power family, and love you all my family.
Love you too, brother.
Even those that don't love me back, I love you all. Now I pray that I didn't say anything that was offensive. And you all have a wonderful evening.
You too, Brother Latron. Thank you so much. And brothers and sisters, of course, we are highly, highly thankful. Highly, highly thankful for Brother Latron and the information that he's dropped on us tonight. And of course, spread this message around. Spread this tape around and get into the economics, get into the trade, get into the strategic business and leadership, get into the profitable planning, get into your life, and let's get our economic minds right, let's get our spiritual minds right, our mental minds right, our physical bodies right, let's get ourselves together. And I'll leave us with this quote from another bad, beautiful, bold brother, the Honorable Amos Wilson.
in his illuminating book called Blueprint for Black Power. Chapter 12, this is page 246. He talks about the economic order and power. He says, the idea that the African-American community can exercise effective power, political or otherwise, without simultaneously exercising economic power is fantasy. He said the election of blacks to high office, even to the highest office, and their plenteous appointments to various courts, powerful directorates, boards, commissions, heads of multinational corporations, powerful regulatory agencies, and the like, would do relatively little, he says, to enhance the power of the African American or black community or release it from its subordinate relationship to the white American community. He says, neither will it measurably increase the probability of its future survival. But while hundreds of African Americans may be fortunate enough to attain positions of influence and affluence in America, millions of average African Americans are marginalized and impoverished simultaneously. He says, ultimately, the power of office reflects the power of the constituency it represents and which supports it. And as long as the African American or black community is relatively weak, so will be its representatives, no matter how high their office. Thank you so much for listening. This is Black Power Radio, and I say tune in and stay tuned for another power-packed presentation of our broadcast, as we will again continue to dig into developing and defending black economics. We will talk about international trade and building a righteous relationship with our brothers and sisters on the mother continent of Africa and other parts of the globe, and most importantly, building a righteous relationship right here in the hells and the smells of North America. And if you are like our brother who was on earlier, who wants to join this organization and join this movement, and you should join it if you're a sane black man and black woman, regardless to your religious affiliation or political persuasion, but if you believe that black people should have black power and that we should control our own economy, our own economics, control our own politics, control our own education, have our own laws and statutes as a community, and be able to respect and protect our elders and protect our people, I say join on to the mission of the new Black Panther Party. In the spirit of the Honorable Dr. Khalid Abdul Muhammad, and in the spirit and with the leadership of Dr. Malik Zulu Shabazz, join on. Go to newblackpanther.com. Click on that right now, newblackpanther.com. Sign up there on the website or go right to nbpphq@yahoo.com. We want to thank again our brother Latron Price, and I want to thank you. This is Brother Sean Saddam Kweli, your host, telling you that it's black power for black people. And it's all power to the people. And remember this, if black people are not free, nobody's free. Black power.
And when we say this, the press calls us racists in reverse. Don't struggle only within the ground rules that the people you're struggling against has laid down. Why, this is insane. But it shows you how they can do. They make the, with skillful manipulating of the press, they're able to make the victim look like the criminal, and the criminal look like the victim. Right now, when in New York, we had a couple cases where police grabbed the brother and beat him unmercifully. But when it comes time for you and me to protect ourselves against lynchers, they tell us to be nonviolent. Because we get tricked into being nonviolent. And when somebody stands up and talks like I just did, they say, well, he's advocating violence. Isn't that what they say? Every time you pick up your newspaper, you hear where one of these things has written into it that I'm advocating violence. And I have never advocated any violence. I've only said that black people who are the victims of organized violence perpetrated upon us by the Klan, the Citizens Council, and many other forms. We should defend ourselves. And when I say that we should defend ourselves against the violence of others, they use their press skillfully to make the world think that I'm calling on violence, period. And I wouldn't call on anybody to be violent without a cause. But I think the black man in this country, above and beyond people all over the world, will be more justified when he stands up and starts to protect himself, no matter how many necks he has to break and heads he has to crack. I saw in the paper where